You are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. This is Jorge Fascinetti. Welcome. Today, we are delighted to talk to Daphne Adelman. Daphne is a clinical nurse specialist at Northwestern University. She is a project manager and study coordinator responsible for overseeing administrative functions and operations for pharmaceutical and National Institutes of Health-sponsored studies. Her main area of concentration is in studies working with pituitary conditions like acromegaly, Cushing's, growth hormone deficiency, and diabetes, among others. She has over 15 years' experience. We caught up with Daphne on the phone a few weeks ago at her office at Northwestern University in Chicago.
Great. Thank you, JD.
Okay. It's wonderful. Thanks so much. First of all, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. So let me ask you, you are an endocrine nurse specializing in acromegaly or other pituitary diseases as well?
So acromegaly is one of my bigger disease conditions, but a lot of the rare diseases, so including Cushing's, hypopituitarism, testosterone deficiency, everything pituitary for the most part.
Yeah.
But then we also, since Dr. Mullich also does diabetes, I'm also doing some of the diabetes studies as well now.
Terrific. Okay. So let me ask you, did you always know that you wanted to be a nurse, or was that a decision that you made as your study progresses or progressed, or as you became more experienced with what you wanted to do?
So actually, initially, I wanted to be a reporter. I wanted to go to college at Marquette to be a reporter, but at the time, my parents didn't think that would be a good career path for a woman at that point. For some reason, my parents are very old school,
yeah,
and obviously Asian, so that wasn't a good choice for them. They didn't like that one. So since my mom was a nurse, I ended up vacillating towards nursing, and I don't regret that, actually. I love it. I'm so happy I chose to be a nurse.
Yeah, well, you've been at it for how many years now?
Gosh, since I graduated in May of, God, what year was that? I can't even think. I see it on my CV all the time, and I can't remember right now.
Doesn't matter.
85 was high school. 89, May 1989.
Wow. So quite. So you've seen the progression of how the endocrine world has gotten better in terms of medication and treatments and quality of life. No, in your career.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say in the past 5 years, it's been escalating. More drugs out there, more studies for different drugs to be created. I mean, it's amazing. I would say it's really progressed quickly in the past 5 years.
Yeah. So what made you decide to go into the endocrine world?
As far as endocrine, to be honest, I originally was a temp in the medical specialties clinic. So that division included endocrine, respiratory, allergy, and rheumatology.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I worked mostly with endocrine physicians. So one day, Dr. Mullich asked me if I would be interested in doing his pharmaceutical studies, because he did NIH studies, but he really didn't have anyone to do pharmaceutical studies. So basically, that was the beginning of my pituitary nurse career, because at the time, I didn't even know what that was. I was really more of a telemetry step-down nurse, and then I became a home care nurse. And then I was just, because I had my kids and they were young, I worked in the clinic, and I didn't really, honestly, I don't think I aspired to be a pituitary nurse at the time.
Yeah. So those are the happy coincidences of life, no?
Right. Yeah.
So, but you know, before we get too much into your profession, tell me a little bit about yourself and where you grew up and your hobbies and the things that interest you other than your work. I know it's difficult to do the work that you do and not be totally interested in your work. Sometimes, but it's good to have these other things as well.
Right. No, so I'm always a proponent of being, well-rounded and balanced. So I grew up in a suburb about 30 minutes outside of Chicago, called Lombard.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents had moved there because at the time they liked the neighborhood after attending the Lilac Parade, which is an annual event in Lombard. So we used to live in the city. We were in downtown Chicago. My parents met at St. Anthony Hospital. They were both, you know, my dad was an intern from the Philippines and my mom was in nurse training from the Philippines. And they met at a party, and that was, you know, that's how they got together.
Yeah.
We lived in the city for a while, and they decided that the city was no place for, you know, to raise children. So that's how we ended up in Lombard. And, I lived there for many years until I went to college, basically. As far as hobbies, I love to travel and exercise. I used to actually be an aerobics instructor, in particular, a Johnny G spinner. I don't know if they have those anymore, but it's like a cycling class.
Yeah.
And I did that pretty much until my boys were born. You can tell I love to be active because I'm always doing 20 million things at once. And I just have a lot of energy and don't sleep very much.
Yeah. I know. Well, you have to with the work that you do, obviously.
Yeah.
Tell me what a typical day for you, a typical work day.
So a typical day for me basically includes seeing study patients, working on submissions for new studies, more like between that and administrative roles, including processing and shipping labs, working on prior authorizations for approval of specialty medications like growth hormone, acromegaly medication, and testosterone. And that takes up a lot of my time.
Yeah. So you see how many patients a day?
It varies because study patients can, I have quite a few studies. I do 8 pharma studies and 3 NIH studies. So it can be anywhere from 1 patient a day to up to 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like short visits where you're only with them for like 10, 15 minutes. Some of the studies are very labor intensive and the patient can be with you for hours, like, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 hours.
Sure.
Depending on the testing you're doing.
Yeah. Those are the really busy days, I'm sure. So let me ask you now about the challenges you have in your profession. What are those that you think patients would be interested in hearing and learning, obviously?
Okay. So a major challenge is the prior authorization process and getting drugs approved through insurance. It's a battle.
Is that getting worse?
Oh, yeah. It's getting tremendously worse.
Yes.
And it's a battle from the long wait times on hold with hopefully the right section of the insurance company. And then you're fighting with the companies to get approval. And then you need to provide all the necessary documentation needed for these approvals. It's a whole big process that patients are not aware of and would not know even where to begin with if they had to do it themselves.
Yes.
You know, it's very frustrating. And in all honesty, I pride myself with a 99% approval rate, but it's a lot of hard work and time involved. But for the most part, I get the meds to the patient. They get access to it because of my long hours. And in all honesty, I do this on my own time. I mean, they're clinic patients. They're not even my patients half the time, and I'm still doing it just because I believe medication access is important for everybody.
Oh, totally. And, you know, we cringe sometimes when we think about, when in the project at Pituitary World News and when we talk to so many patients, we often wonder if there's somebody that's going without medication because they're just not aware or their means. You know, I know there's tons of help for people, but sometimes it's difficult to find it.
Right.
If you don't know where to go. So the work that you do is spectacular in that. And I would ask you, do you think there's anything that us, you know, as patient advocates or publishers, we can do to make this better for people?
I think a lot of the offices don't have the manpower to do some of the prior auths. So a lot of the companies will help with it if they can.
Yes.
But the, like you said, it's a matter of knowing. And a lot of patients don't even know that they can have access to these drugs. A lot of companies do support the medication if, you know, not only financially, but if there's a need and they don't really have the money or, you know, the means to get it.
Yeah.
There are some support, you know, there's other, not just the companies itself, but there's other networks like Patient Access Network.
Yes.
You know, help NORD. So I think getting the awareness out there is very important so that there's at least an option to try to get the meds. Mm-hmm. You can't say that you're not going to get it. You know, you just have to you have to work, and, you know, it's frustrating because I think a lot of times patients are not aware of a lot of the, you know, different companies that can help them.
I agree. And we've been trying to put that information out there. I think the patient support groups do a wonderful job with some of this. But it would be nice to have a centralized place where people know to go to, where there's all kinds of links and information. Because I think the problem, I don't know if you agree, but the problem that I see is there's so much information out there, but some of it is very difficult to get to.
Absolutely.
The sheer quantity of it. So
I'll give you a very easy and very recent example of access.
Yeah.
So one of the docs was trying to find out for me, he wanted to prescribe pasireotide. And as you know, Novartis has really not been out there in the endocrine world as much. We don't have a rep anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to have a peak support program that you can have all the paperwork and fax it to them directly.
Yes.
And I had to basically go on the internet to find how do I, access their, to get a prescription for LAR and pasireotide. And it's not easy. It took me at least over an hour to find it.
Wow.
But there's new forms and it's lumped in with all the other specialty drugs, very rare disease drugs. So, and it's actually page 9 and 10 of this long, 10 to 11 page thing. And LAR and pasireotide is at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So they lump all their drugs into this one thing, and it's not advertised or anything. And I don't even know how I stumbled upon it, but we were finally able to find it. And that's how you can prescribe their drug now. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Or at least with the help that you need.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can still write a prescription, but I don't know if it goes anywhere, to be honest, because it's a specialty med.
Yes. Yeah. That's very interesting. Because we hear about it. We don't see it obviously, but we hear about it in comments all the time. So it's something that we're always thinking about in terms of what we could advocate for and where the help is needed.
Right.
So let's just shift a little bit in terms of, the new things that are coming down the pipe and the things that you're exposed to in terms of, let's say, drug development of new therapies. Where do you see these activities going? And in your view, I think we're making progress, but in terms of new medications, but what's your feeling about that?
So I'm excited that there's, for such a, I don't want to say it's a small indication, but, there's not as many acromegaly patients versus diabetes,
Sure.
So I don't want to minimize it because, every patient's very important to me. But I'm excited for a lot of these new drugs that are going to be out there. And we're doing a lot of the, newer clinical trials that are upcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that, they'll all show up in clinicaltrials.gov. But
yes,
it's exciting. I mean, there's an Ionis company that's doing a antisense drug that we're starting clinical trials soon. And then Crinetics is doing their form version of an oral octreotide. I mean, it's exciting times. I'm very excited because there's options, and that's the key thing.
Yeah. I think so too. And there seems to be, at least since I was diagnosed in 2010, there seems to have been an acceleration in the last 3 or 4 years of development and research and people thinking about this. So that's very exciting. How do you think patients should be involved? And do you see the movements in that area in a positive way? That is, more patient involvement means more understanding, maybe faster development of drugs. Do you see an area where things are not happening that they should be happening in terms of patients?
I think for patients to have a better voice, they need to start being part of the clinical trials.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that I don't know if they realize how important it is to be in a clinical trial and to actually get these drugs out there. Cause I have a good relationship and rapport with a lot of my patients, but there's still some patients that don't understand the value of a clinical trial. And it's important because without these trials, you won't get these new drugs,
Right.
And it seems like they get more patients out in Europe. And to be honest, a lot of the companies are starting to move to Europe to do a lot of their studies, but we need these drugs in the US as well. And, we need to have them here to get the data for the FDA.
Yeah.
The FDA is not going to take the European, data and just say, okay, this is fine, you know. So it's important for our patients here to try to get involved, you know, both in terms of being part of studies or at least, you know, kind of pushing other patients. Just saying that it's important, you know, try to be involved. And I know it's a lot of time and it involves a lot of work sometimes, but it's invaluable.
Benefits.
You know, the benefits are amazing. And to be honest, like a lot of the sites we will do so many things for you. We will help you with, you know, appointments. We will work with you to get, you know, whatever you need. I think it's an added benefit to be in a clinical trial because we do treat you a lot better. Not that we would, you know, in normal standard of care, we do our best, but I think I go out of my way for my, you know, research patients.
Sure. So in your opinion, what would be the best place to go to learn about clinical trials? And we've published a few things, but sometimes it's difficult to keep up with all the developments. Is there a central place where we could send people to at least to look at and then where to ask more questions?
So the main place that everyone goes to is clinicaltrials.gov.
Yes.
And at least you can punch in acromegaly and then it'll show you all the sites doing active trials.
Yeah.
But I think Jill does a great job of in acromegaly community, letting know what trials are being out, you know, that are out there and that they need support and help and patients.
Yeah. Well, and our readers are also, you know, patients with Cushing's and growth hormone deficiency and hypopituitarism. So all of those are listed there. So I think not only acromegaly, but there's need in all of the endocrine rare disorders, more patient involvement for clinical trials.
It's important.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with you. So let me ask you now about, you know, we've been talking about and writing about the tremendous amount of misinformation and false claims sometimes that you see in the internet, particularly, that oftentimes can be very dangerous for people, that unsubstantiated, sorry about that.
No worries.
Claims without any scientific backup at all. So what are your thoughts on this? And do you see it often where people come so misinformed and trying sometimes dangerous things for their conditions? Is that something that you come across?
Actually, luckily, I haven't really come across too many patients that are, you know, not so much misinformed, but I don't think they've tried anything dangerous or reckless as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But
that is great to hear.
Yeah, but I do tell them to, you know, whenever you look at stuff on the internet, you know, especially with all this, with the Facebook and all that, you know, the fake news and all that, you just have to be mindful and know that this is just a source of information. It may not be accurate. You know, you take it, you know, use your gut. I mean, you know, we all have common sense. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
But there's a few, you know, sites that we rely on, you know, or a lot of the universities have their websites that are pretty reliable. And then, you know, pituitary, obviously I trust you guys.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, pituitary hormone, there's several sites that are good. I can't think of them right now off the top of my head, but we usually have a list that we'll refer patients to for guidance. But in all honesty, sometimes, you know, people don't want to do the work on that. They might see a post from somebody and they think that's, you know, the truth. So, I mean, I think you should just be mindful of when people, you know, put things out there and just know that it's not always the truth. And you should, you know, really check your facts before you really, you know, take it to heart.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know you are a big proponent of multidisciplinary approaches to patient care and research. So I know that, and for the first time, there's a conference coming up with the Acromegaly Society and the endocrine nurses and the acromegaly community, the Pituitary Society, a joint meeting in New Orleans. So let's talk a little bit about that. Those are very positive things, I think, no?
Oh, absolutely. So I am a big proponent of the team approach, and it is so critical nowadays. Everyone has to be a part of the plan and an active player in their healthcare. And if so, this reaps the best quality of life if all members are willing to listen and work towards a common goal. And I believe that adherently.
Yes. Yeah. I'm very excited about it. I was, as you know, part of the steering committee
yes.
for that. And I thought it was a tremendous step and personally, I hope we can do more of that because I think it's going to be very, very, very good. I know we touched a little bit about on the challenges of the profession, but when it comes to what you do every day, are there things that keep you up at night thinking about things we could do better?
So the challenges for me basically is getting these medications approved.
Yeah.
That's a big challenge. And I sometimes don't think patients realize how much work is involved with that.
Yes.
And yeah. It could take, yeah, that's why when it takes a long time, I don't think they understand that. And I want them to just be patient and know that we are doing our best to get it through. And, you know, like I said, I have a 99% success rate of getting those meds to you, but
yeah,
you know,
so is the issue more bureaucratic?
It's an insurance company.
It's money.
Thing.
It's a money issue.
I believe it's money. It's just the insurance companies saying it's not on the formulary or wanting you to have something cheaper. I've never seen it before with acromegaly, but it's starting now.
Yeah.
It's more of a problem in growth hormone for adults.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's even happening in, you know, between acromegaly and even testosterone. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the best thing is when medication actually works and the peel, you know, I think one of the things you brought up before is what stands out and what makes me happy, you know?
Yeah.
And I think when you see these new drugs and they actually work and the patient feels better and they can go about their life again without having to be dragged down by their condition, even for a day or even longer, that makes me so happy that, you know, there are these companies out there that are trying to create and develop these amazing drugs.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling.
Yeah. And you see it firsthand because you see the patients coming back, in much better moods. As you know, these conditions can be very, very stressful. And when on top of that, you put medication issues, it's just, that shouldn't happen.
We need that advocacy to get things done because I think a lot of other conditions, they have, you know, from breast cancer to other bigger population conditions, they have these advocacy groups. And that's why they get a lot of the funding. And it's important because without the money, we can't do the research.
Yeah, and they're very aggressive and they do a very good job in Washington and they're very good job about to get in front of the people that they need to get in front of to make life easier for patients. So definitely that's something that we want to do and we are working on. I'm sure you deal with countless cases and patients with pituitary disease that come to your practice. Are there any patients or cases or stories that stand out for you that you'd like to share with us?
Sure. There was this one patient that, so we don't really try a lot of pasireotide here.
Yeah.
Just because our physicians just didn't use it that much. And so we were doing one of the Novartis studies. And as a result, I met a wonderful patient that was actually at the AC meeting a couple years ago.
Okay.
The really tall gentleman. I won't mention names, but
no, that's fine.
Yeah, but it was a great experience just because it was just the way he really appreciated what I did, and like even so, he still calls me little mom because first of all, I'm so short and he's so huge, and I really, you know, we really bonded, and I really, you know, I got to know his family. And his mom always came at the visits. And it's just, even though he has pretty much an aggressive tumor, because he's had major, like he's had probably 3 transphenoidals and radiation.
Oh, wow.
And he's still, you know, having issues. But the fact that the medication was working, you know, and helping him, it just made me feel good that there's, you know, these options out there for patients.
Yeah.
And that, you know, not all of them might work for you, but, you know, they're still trying to develop new ones. And maybe something will be better for you that will help you, you know, feel different and feel back to normal, which I know a lot of patients just want to feel, you know.
That's absolutely right. It's for me, sometimes it's just meeting people that have this tremendous positive attitude with really tough conditions that they deal
with
and quality of life issues. And they just get ready and get up and say, what can we do to help? And they're always there. Those are the people that really are... I've met some fantastic people in the meetings, you know, and in the different meetings that I go. And as we hear from people, you know, that write us back.
Right.
So very, very, a very, very cool experience. So anyway, well, Daphne, I want to thank you tremendously for taking the time to chat with me. I know you have a tremendously busy day and practice, so I want to thank you very much for taking time out and talking to us.
No, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time because I know you as well have a very busy day in life. And it's important. I just want patients to know that, we are here for you, and I'm also here for you because I'm also part of acromegaly community. I want to reach out and let you guys all know that we are, here to support you and help you with whatever you need. And just know that people care about you and you guys are beautiful people, and we, and I'm just, proud to have worked in this field. And actually, I did want to share one story. I totally
Ahead.
forgot about this.
Sure.
So when you asked me what brought me, or was this a career path I chose as far as pituitary? In all honesty, it must have been some subconsciously in my mind because growing up, my brother used to watch. So we're 7 years apart, and I babysat a lot for him, and we used to watch, and not willingly, but the World Wrestling Federation. And I
Oh,
was
yeah,
always,
sure.
yeah, and I was always intrigued by Andre the Giant.
Yes.
And at the time, I never thought, oh my gosh, little did I know that I would actually be working in that field where, obviously Andre didn't take it seriously, and he never got treated, actually. He
No,
never
that's
wanted to
right.
be
He
treated.
did not want to. I read that. Yes.
Yeah, he chose because he wanted to be big, actually.
Yes.
So, later on in life, I really found out, I did some research on Andre and found out that later he had gone to his father's funeral in France and end up having a heart attack, I think in his early 40s because he never was treated.
Correct.
And as a result, they could not bury him there. He wanted to be cremated, but unfortunately, there were not big enough cremation places in France, which surprises me. But anyway, he ended up going back to North Carolina to,
Wow, I
to
didn't
here
know
to,
that.
yeah.
What's such an he that's such an interesting life and such an interesting story. I saw the one of the documentaries they did on him, and it's always sad to see. From to me, it just produces sadness. I don't know why. Okay,
Well,
Daphne, it's been
anyways,
wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.
yeah, thank you.
Our thanks to Daphne for taking the time to talk to us, and also to all our supporters. Without their help, we would not be able to keep producing podcasts, writing articles, and keep the site and social media channels safe and working efficiently. Pituitary World News is a nonprofit, charitable organization supported by people like you and organizations that, just like you, believe in our mission to elevate awareness of pituitary disease, to reduce time to diagnosis and improve quality of life. We are constantly searching for new ways of reaching more people in the hope that this knowledge will lead to more interest in pituitary disease from the general public and help us fulfill our mission. If you'd like to donate, any amount is truly appreciated. Please go to pituitaryworldnews.org and click on the Get Involved button at the top of the front page to get our donations page. Your donation is fully tax deductible. We are very grateful. Thank you for listening.